in. Good Thursday morning. Thursday, March 21st. Oh, my good. First day of spring. 2019.
Yes, it is my daughter Kelly's birthday.
Oh, happy birthday to Kelly. This is Over the Back Fence. Pastor Steve Whitaker, Scott Spears. In our new time slot, we will be here now each and every Thursday morning, 9, 10 to 10 a.m. And by the way, this show does repeat and will continue to repeat on Sunday morning, 9, 10 to 10 a.m. exactly at this time. And Tuesday evenings from 6, 10 to 7 p.m. following Pastor Whitaker's other show on this station, The Pastor Spot with Terry Tackett, which airs live every Tuesday, 5, 10 to 6 p.m., Wednesdays, 3, 10 to 4 p.m., and Sunday mornings, 8, 10 to 9 a.m. So here we are, live and it's spring, Pastor.
Yes, it is spring, and it's a nice spring morning out there. I did hear this morning, though, on the news, they said, we're going to let you know when that cold weather is coming back around again. Personally, I'm kind of done with it.
You know, the news to me, when it comes to weather, I really seems like they can't give us any good news without bad news now.
It seems that way, doesn't it?
It's going to be warm today, but next week, watch out, here comes the cold again.
It's been different. It certainly is. So much for global warming, I suppose.
I guess.
At least in this particular time frame, right?
You know, I would like to know what a qualification is for a meteorologist, because it does seem to me in a little bit of a way of I don't want to say mundane job, but it doesn't change a whole lot.
No, it doesn't. And some of the equipment they have at their hands now, they can get it pretty quick and pretty easy, and they can project pretty well. You know, it used to be they were just really good guessers because they had to. They couldn't see. They didn't have the Doppler radar and all these different things they have. But, yeah, I don't know what the qualifications are either. But I will say this. Some of you do a wonderful job, and I'm sure you're very well educated in your field.
Oh, absolutely. And I think there are people who do great jobs. But I don't understand why we have to project 10 days now. I don't understand why we have to. Because half the time, it's by the time you get to that 10th day,
it's not worth it.
Completely wrong. And snowstorms do frighten people. You can see it in the grocery store anytime somebody calls for one. I don't know. I kind of wish that meteorologists, yes, you have to give the highs and lows of yesterday, today, and tomorrow. That's without question. But I almost wish they did something more. Tell us something about the weather. Tell us something we don't know. A lot of us don't know about the intricacies of the weather.
No, you know, the old story, red sky at night, sailor's delight, red sky in the morning, sailor's warning. Well, why is that? Where's that come from? And, you know, those kind of things would be interesting. And I think there's some that in the past that have, one that was that I don't like to name drop too much on here, but one that I thought was always good at telling those little stories was Jim Ganahl.
Jim always
liked to stick those things in there and tell them. But, you know, I think that the one reason we do have the long-range forecast, because if they're even halfway close to accurate, the farmers depend a lot on that. And although, I'll be honest with you, most farmers now have that downloaded radar. They can get it without even, you know, being on anything. But people plan vacations, and they want to know, you know, well, what do I need to take? What should I wear? You know, patterns are one thing. But anyway, we're kind of getting off, I guess, our subject this morning.
Well, the last thing I want to say about this weather thing, because this is one of the things that always makes me laugh. You will not find any radio station, any television station, anybody who does weather, who doesn't refer to themselves as the most accurate.
I know it.
Everyone's the most accurate.
You know, it's like being the best doctor or the best dentist. I am the best doctor.
Do you think you have to, though? If you went on and just said, here's the weather, would people question it?
I don't know.
I mean, I don't even know if that helps. You know, I really...
I think a great personality will trump...
Yes.
How much you say you're accurate or not.
Well, I always think, it's kind of like breaking news. You know, does that mean anything to anybody anymore, breaking news?
No, it really doesn't, because everything's breaking news.
Right.
Breaking news, a school bus just ran over a stop sign, you know. Yeah.
And Columbus News. I mean, let's say we watch Channel 4. Okay. Well, every day we hear that it's the most accurate news forecast. But if you're watching Channel 10, they're saying the same thing.
Yeah, I don't think any of them are accurate, but I'll let it go at that. Which leads us into the next topic
Absolutely.
We didn't finish on from the other night, is cash, C-A-S-H, and how it affects our news, how it affects daily, what happens. You know, it's real interesting. I was listening to some stuff early this morning, and a lot of things that today that can't be done legislatively are being done through cash. And I'll kind of give you an example. There's been a lot of pressure, I know, put on banks to not finance things that people don't like. Already, there's been some major banks and credit cards that have put conditions on whether they will allow a gun store to use their services, whether they, you can order. A lot of times you see online something someone wants to order, well, this particular bank card will not let you do it anymore, and that's all been through political lobbying to those people. I know that the there's been some great pressure put on lately, the pipeline in North Dakota, to on the banks to not fund what's going on there and pull back that funding because they couldn't get the legislative part done. And another one that's really, really huge that I heard is the private prison systems have recently had, the banks that are funding them have pulled back and said they're not going to fund them, and that was all through political pressure. And I'm usually behind political pressure. I think you're going to find cash too. And I think it's interesting that with the immigration system right now, the most of the detaining centers are privately held. Well, I know that they're at their capacity, by the way. I know that on Tuesday they released 200 in a general population, and they were expected to release another 300 yesterday because they're at complete capacity. Well, if you're losing the funding for those two, then you see, I guess what I'm getting at is that if we can't win politically, we'll just go financially.
You know, when it comes to the prisons, that's a very interesting topic because I'm kind of 50-50 on this, and I don't know where in the end I'll end up.
I don't know where I am either.
Well, the fact that they're starting to release people, this is something I've advocated for a long time, because they're not going to release murderers. They're not going to release people who are doing violent
crime. I was talking about just at the border.
At the border, right. But on a local level, because right. The jails are filling up.
Right, right.
And this applies to the border in my mind, too, is that I just don't know. We've been locking people up for a lot of reasons for many, 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 many years. And I don't know if it works. They used to be called reformatories, and that became...
Because they stopped reforming.
We don't reform. So I don't know what good it does anymore. If you're violent, okay, I understand that, because we don't want you out doing violent things to other people. But if you're not violent, and we're not trying to fix your problem, what is the point? It's costing taxpayers money at the border and on the local level.
You know, that is a good question, and my experience has been in over the years and watching how things go on. Because of crime and people that have been victims of crime, when someone runs on being tough on crime and putting people away, they have a tendency to get a leg up in election. And the problem with that is then they got to follow through. Well, I am with you on the fact, Scott, that you know the old saying that you put a rotten apple will spoil the whole bunch? Well, sometimes a good apple, or a fairly good apple, can turn rotten from the whole bunch being rotten. And what I mean by that is, I know that wasn't a very eloquent way to say that. But my point being this, that you send somebody to jail for a minor thing, and you put them into the population that has done everything, knows everything, and every trick in the book, they're usually going to come out more of a criminal than when they went in. And that's just a fact, and everybody knows it. And I'm with you. I think that violent crime, you need incarcerated. I don't need someone that is prone to violence walking the streets if they're going to continue in crime. However, I think that there can be, with nonviolent crime, a lot of different deterrents that if you don't do A, B, and C, then you will go to jail.
Oh, absolutely.
Not just jail right off the get-go. Now, the problem we're having with a lot of people are talking about the drug felonies and people, well, that's not a violent crime. Well, it is a violent crime. And the reason it's a violent crime is for two reasons. One is that they usually end up resorting to crime to get the money. And the worst crime of all is that they enlist other people into what they're doing in order to keep their supply coming in what they're doing. And that makes it even worse. So I don't know what the answer is. And I'm with you. It's frustrating. I'm not sure where we go. we can program things to death sometimes, and programs are only as good as the people that put them together and the people that administrate them.
Well, the issue with me is, and I'm right with you on the drug issue, because we obviously are seeing deaths from this. So this is a problem that people are losing their life. Even if it's a large amount of money, let's say somebody steals $500,000, I never saw that cause somebody to die.
No.
And you're not going to put them away for life. So, and what are they going to learn in prison that's going to stop them from doing that?
So what do you do, Scott? What deterrent do you give them that will say it isn't worth it to do that anymore?
You know what I wish this country did, to be honest, when it came to white-collar crimes? I wish they'd close all the white-collar reformatories. We'd save a lot of money. And I believe I wish the penalty was whatever you steal, you've got to pay back. And based upon the money, and I don't know what rubric this would be, but you are going to have to do community service. You are going to have to go to those places where we always say we're shorthanded. You know, people who work in schools as janitors, as mechanics. You're going to learn, you're going to have to be in a field you have not been in, and you're going to do it for free. And at the same time, you're going to have to work to pay back this money. And that's going to be a terrible buying for you.
And if you don't do it, then you go to jail.
Then you're going to be in trouble. Yeah, and also if you continue to do it, if you're convicted of it three times, well, then we've got to do something different.
Kind of like Art Schleister.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because Art Schleister's in the penitentiary right now, been there before. Do you think Art Schleister's getting reformed right now that he's...
I don't think Art Schleister is reformable.
Right. So, but his last crime, I do think, was a little different. I mean, he... misrepresented himself. It was more of a fraud thing.
They're all penny and nickel crimes. Yeah. You know, it comes down to it.
Yeah.
And I think that you're right. If he would get out of jail and be made to do either you do A, B, or C, or you're going right back to jail. You know, some of these things. We have fraud all around us anyway. And what's really not fair is that if you have enough money, you can usually get out of a fraud crime. The people that are going to get more jail time for fraud crimes are going to usually going to be people that have nothing anyway. And it's never been a fair crime. From the time I've been a young man, and I worked with politicians when I was a young man, and people of influence, and I have seen that they freely go about doing things. In many cases, I'm not calling you all out, but in many cases, these people are free to go on doing all kinds of things that, quite frankly, Scott, you or I would go to jail for.
Well, that's true. And it's also interesting to me that I also find that the lower economic people, and I'm not saying this is every case, but sometimes they don't know what they're doing is a crime because they can't afford financial advisors. They can't afford all these high-dollar people who can do this sort of thing. I think half the time they don't even realize what they're doing is wrong. When I see... of people who, you know, auditors and things like that who show up, most of the time the people, I think, are genuinely shocked. They don't know what, oh, I was supposed to be doing that.
I think there's ways that we can, there's a lot of reform that needs done. A friend of mine, Kevin Armstrong, who lives in Oklahoma, went to school with me. Kevin has been in the newspaper business and a lot of business. But one of the things that he's really been into in the last few years has been in prison reform. And he's got a really good program started where they're gaining a lot of support with a lot of the reforms and things that we're talking about. A great guy, good Christian man, but he sees the wrongs within the system and he wants to help that. I want to share a little story with you that is an actual true story. I shared it with Terry the other night off the air. It was about someone I knew many years ago. Many years ago, I knew someone that was wrongly arrested. It was a complete case of mistaken identity. They were arrested from their place of employment, which everyone saw. They went to jail. They didn't show up at home that night. The family received a phone call that they were in jail and what they had been arrested for, and that they would not be arraigned for probably sometime in the next 10 days. Okay. Now, to make a long story short on that, the family was a family that had some means. they immediately got on the phone call to the proper lawyer, which directed them to another lawyer, which he thought could do a better job. To make a long story short, that lawyer got a hold of a judge that night, and the next morning, this person was brought into arraignment immediately. They found the mistake, and they were released. Okay? Now, let's change this up a little bit. Pretend, or let's just say, another scenario. Now, that's a true story that happened. Let's say that there was a lady, and or a man, and she had kids at home. She was a single mother, was barely making ends meet. She was at work. They came in and arrested her on a false situation, took her to jail. She had no one to call. Children's Services goes in and takes her kids. She has to sit in jail for 10 days. She loses her job. No one's going to believe that she's innocent, because why would they arrest you, right? She finally goes into court in 10 days, and they find the mistake, and they say, I'm sorry, and they release her. She's lost her kids. She's probably lost her house because she lost her job. She's in a huge financial ruin. She's marked. You see the problem with our system?
Oh, it's horrible. And you know what? I will say this. When somebody is accused of a crime and arrested or charged or indicted or whatever they call it, that's a big story. But the outcome, or if there is vindication, or even if charges are dropped by the end, or even the explanation of why it happened, that's usually not as big a story. It's not on the front page.
Oh, it never is. It never is.
And what bothers me about this whole thing is, if you want to accuse anybody of a crime, you can accuse me of a crime if you want. Okay, that's fine. You can accuse me. But if it comes back that it's not true, what about you?
Well, here's the thing that I proposed the other day in a conversation with someone. And I was talking about all these accusations flying around politically right now. And I think that if you have a political person that wants to attack you, wants to have you investigated, I think they should have the same investigation brought on them.
Absolutely.
And here's where I go back to the Bible with that. Everybody loves that passage. Judge not lest ye be judged. Now, the point is, most people say, hey, the Bible says not to judge anybody. Well, that's not what it says. You know, the Bible does plenty of judging, and we're supposed to, you know, God's judgment, we're supposed to tell what God's judgment is as a warning to people not to do things, not as a finger pointer or a bully whip. But what it says is, judge not lest you be judged by the same manner in which you judge the other. In other words, you know, if you're willing going to judge somebody for something, you better be willing to have it turned right back on you the same way. And if we would just follow that principle, it would stop a lot of this stuff, because I could make an accusation about you all day long, Scott, that was not accurate, or maybe I even thought it was. But here's the question. Am I willing to have that same investigation come back on me? Of course not, because no one ever knows what odd things someone's going to dig up that may not even be accurate and start a whole mess. So it would stop a lot of this stuff.
Well, I've always said this, and I used to have this discussion with a caller who called in here, I used to have great conversations with. When somebody writes a book about somebody else, and the book is filled with negatives, now, whether you like that person or not, or whether you even believe these negatives are true or not, that's fine. But understand, somebody paid them to write the book. And understand, an editor read that book before they put it out. So you've got to understand that that's what they wanted the book to be. Like, let's say, because usually it's always written by a former close friend. Well,
yes,
the word
yes.
Former should tip you off right away.
Yes, it should.
And the thing of it is that if I am your friend and I know you did these bad things, what would motivate me to put that in a book?
I can tell you what it is. Two things. One, you're a former close friend, yeah. Like you said, and B, cash.
There you go.
And cash is always a motivator. Even when we get to, when we look at our news stations and what goes on, and everyone's always complaining about fake news this and fake news that. Well, we have to go back and look. Who owns the station? What is their agenda? are they willing to have it be a balance station, or do they really in the really want to get a certain opinion across? Now, everyone that does news has an editor, and that editor may or may not, depending on the station or all stations, may or may not have directives coming down from a top to say, above that say, this is where you go and this is where you don't go. I'll allow this. And that editor knows going into a story whether he's going to get his bottom chewed off or not by letting a story go. And it all comes back to money.
Well, this is a conversation you and I had off the air the other night before your Tuesday night show. And I thought about it again this morning. We have these news channels, and people watch them. The ratings actually have been up in the last couple years. Now, I've said this before. This is no shock. They all revolve around the president. One station likes him, one station hates him, and one station likes him and hates him depending on what the story is. Now, here, and that brings up the conversation of fake news. It brings up the conversation of political bias. It brings up this conversation. And it's the wrong conversation to be having, but that's the one we're having. I'm telling you, if I'm going to take the two that don't necessarily report rosy things all the time, because this will make more sense. CNN and MSNBC are not particularly rosy to the president all the time. Well, let me tell you something. If they really wanted to hurt him, if they really didn't like him, they just wouldn't report on him. That's the best way to hurt him. So every time you see a negative story, every time you see his face on their television, every time you see them, even if they're coming back saying something negative, trust me, they love him. They love him to the degree that he's making money for them, because if they were really interested in hurting the president, they would never talk about him.
Ah, good point. But at the same time, I think it's a love-hate relationship. I think they love him that he makes news. I think that they hate him because of his position, and they kind of prove that in their reporting of him and the way they report it.
I'll tell you where I realized this in the beginning. People felt on those two stations that they were very pro-Hillary. Okay. I want somebody to go back on MSNBC or CNN and figure out how many Hillary rallies did they cover, and how many Trump rallies did they cover? I don't think they covered a Hillary rally bell to bell during the entire election.
I would like them to go back on the other side of that and see what rallies they covered in the light in which they covered them. Because I watched the news and I watched those rallies. And typically the Hillary rallies, they covered them as Hillary rallies. The Trump rallies, they covered as hate mongers, of a fight broke out here, this broke out there. You see, the difference isn't the coverage in the way it was being covered. I would be hard-pressed to believe for a minute that there's anyone at MSNBC that even likes Donald Trump a little bit. Now, he's given him a lot of fodder. You know, just in the last couple of days, you know, the thing with John McCain yesterday, you know. I'm not a John McCain fan. Has nothing to do with Donald Trump. I've never been a John McCain fan, and I have my own reasons for that. His own father wasn't a John McCain fan. His wife waited on him the whole time he was in that prison. When he came out, he divorced her for a nicer, younger model. I don't think much of men that do that kind of thing. And the list can go on and on and on. Those are my problems, John McCain. However, our president has bigger fish to fry than go on tirades about John McCain, even though John McCain, I know he's upset this time because he passed on the Steele dossier rather than doing what he should have done with it. He caused more fire. And, you know, the president's upset. But come on, Donald, Mr. President, let's get on with things and not do that. But what I'm saying is that these stations love that. I think that, you know, I think that you can have really positive news and still have news. I mean, they reported when Barack Obama was in office, MSNBC reported on him every day, but it was something really great, either about his wife, what she was doing, or what she was wearing, or, you know, he's over here shooting baskets with this group of people at a gym, or he's doing this good thing, and they reported constantly too. I think that it's, I think money is the factor behind it.
But isn't it interesting though that during the tenure of President Obama, when they were doing those stories, MSNBC was nowhere near being the number one cable news network. Now, in the era of Trump, where they are negative, and they are negative to the president all the time, they now are the number one news network. Now, they have to love that. And I don't think you will ever see them go back to a day long after Trump where now it is not driven by that type of news story. Because they've now...
I get you. I think, though, they're the number one news network among a certain audience. And that's what is driving that.
Well, what shocked me was, back in December, when Rachel Maddow became the number one show on cable news.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
She's Hatred Central.
What and that's the point. I looked at that and I thought, when Rachel Maddow started, and you were right, when the flowery stories were about President Obama, she wasn't, I think, finishing third. She was third in that time slot, let alone the most popular person in cable news. But now that her show is driven by, lead story is Trump in some way every night, she's number one. Number one in 2 years.
Well, I think I'm just getting ready in a second here to change the direction with the show, and it comes out of what you just said. I think that the problem that we're seeing, and one of the reasons you're seeing that, is we have a society today that is seething on bad stories, on bad things. It's seething in hatred. It is taking politics way too personally. Between each people, they're feeding on that or the ratings wouldn't be going up. They're feeding on that hatred. They're feeding on their distrust. They like it. It's almost like a cheerleading session. You know, yeah, you get him. Come on, Rachel, let's put one more in him. And, you know, if they go to Rachel, they know they can be guaranteed that's exactly what's going to happen. Just like, you know, if they go and if they listen to Sean Hannity, you know, they know they're going to get the opposite. And those people are strong Sean Hannity supporters. And we're becoming very polarized in our country. But can I go just a little bit different direction a minute? I think that we're losing our way as people. And it's like I was talking to you a few minutes ago about my, you know, when I was a kid growing up, there were people on both sides of the party in our neighborhood. But we were just all neighbors. And we didn't get all personal about where each other's politics were. And there wasn't, you know, all this hatred and finger pointing and calling people haters and racists and this. When race has nothing to do with it. You know, the it's just like the situation in New Zealand the other day. And the mass shooting. What a horrible, evil thing was done. But you know what? That had nothing to do with race. It had everything to do with ideology and religion. It didn't have anything to do with race, but it's being reported as race. Why? Because race is the thing that gets people fired up today and brings ratings.
Well, this
not
is,
ideology.
Well, I think the last show we did in this particular series, we talked about this with Sally Jesse Raphael, and this is true. And if people didn't hear that show, I would implore them to go to the website and listen to that again, because it made a lot of very strong points about the society we are.
That was good.
Yeah, if you want to stop this, if you don't want this anymore, you've got to understand that writing the networks and this, it isn't going to work, because as long as it continues to work for them, they're going to do it. So until, and you know, this whole idea, and this is kind of where we started today, so it's a good dovetail, money, cash, okay. This whole idea of, I don't like that show, so I've got to write the sponsor and say, oh, don't do that show anymore, we've got to pull your money and all this sort of thing. To me, that's the downfall of America, because that's polarization. That's right. Absolute polarization. But if you tune them out, that let the sponsor decide on their own. Nobody's watching.
You know, Media Matters was at Fox the other day trying to get Tucker Carlson off the air.
And
they were protesting out front because they decided they didn't like what he said, and they were going to protest, and they were protesting the sponsors, poll everything. I agree with you completely. Let the public decide if they want to watch or not.
Right. I mean, I don't understand. We've had this conversation before, but it's the truest statement in the world. Why would you want to, if you have a different opinion, why would you want to be on a station or on an outlet, and internet outlets are this way now too, why would you want to be on one that feels the exact same way as you?
Who? That's like right now on this show.
Yeah.
Excuse me, Scott. Right now on this show, it's like, okay, if everyone out there agrees with everything you and I are saying, what good are we doing?
Nothing.
I think we're having this conversation because we want people to understand. We want to get to their understanding and maybe get them to think a little deeper. And so I agree with you completely. Those of you that weren't listening to what Scott, when Scott and I had that discussion about Sally, Jesse, Raphael, why don't you delve into that just a bit?
Yeah, well, basically it was Sally. If you watch the early days of her show, she was on 19 years. She was a syndicated show. First woman actually to be syndicated, pioneer. Her early shows were all very different than the end. In the beginning, they were about UNICEF. They were about Mothers Against Drunk Driving. They did shows on AIDS. They were topically oriented shows that you could walk away learning. They had scientists on, celebrities on. It was a daytime show, kind of like a Johnny Carson type of show. And then Jerry Springer came along. And Jerry Springer's company also owned Sally Jesse Raphael's company. And Jerry Springer started having the fights on his show, and the ratings went through the roof. And they went to Sally, and they said, you've got to do this. You've got to be that type of show. Because, number one, it costs us a whole heck of a lot of money to fly in Bob and June from Nashville than it does Audrey Hepburn. So that's going to be better for us, and we're going to get a bigger rating. And Sally, I interviewed her. She said, I kept telling them, no, I won't, no, I won't, no, I won't. And eventually they said, we're going to cancel you unless you do. And she did, because she said, I have 200 people working on my show. I can't burden that. And
shoulder show.
Yeah, yeah, and it did in the end. But the thing about it is that her line that was so brilliant was, she said, when I did it, I thought, they'll only watch that for so long. They'll only watch people fighting for so long. And she said, but I was wrong. She said, they'll watch it again and again and again.
And,
again.
And it goes back to this. It's just like, you know, the Bible talks about sin taking root and people not being able to get enough of it. And it's so accurate in that, because if you look at anything, you look at hatred, you look at violence, you look at pornography, you look at the blood and guts and gore on some of the violence that people watch it, they got to keep stepping it up and stepping it up and stepping it up. Pornography's that way. You know, people start looking at some pictures here and there, before you know it, that doesn't cut it anymore, and it goes deeper and deeper and deeper. And everything that is vile seems to do that. Well, as a pastor, I know that that's the process of sin and what happens. But whether you believe the Bible or not, it's true. That's what happens when you take things that do that to you emotionally. The emotions get a little bit calloused, and then you got to take a step further to get things a little bit deeper and get that same emotional feel back. It's almost like a drug.
Well, that's why I say it's right back to the conversation before that one. You can blame the host. You can blame the company that owns it. You can blame the sponsors that support it. If you weren't watching it, they wouldn't be there.
I read an article the other day about children, young children, that watch real gory violence as toddlers and in those formative years and on up to 5, 6, 7, 8. And it was talking about how those kids, they're finding, psychologists are finding, that those kids have a problem relating to reality as they become teenagers. They have a real problem understanding and even grasping reality in a lot of cases. And it goes back to that, what that does to their mind as a toddler. You know, parents out there, you really need to be careful about what we expose our young people to. And even the violence that we see on the shows and on and television, you know, I think in some ways the news has become violent, only in that because of that very thing we're talking about, the kids hear and see things they should never see.
Well, that even goes back to print media. I mean, I love to watch people at the news rack at the grocery store, because I will tell you that, let's say National Geographic. National Geographic is sold in those news racks, but so is The Inquirer, so is all those crazy magazines that I don't think have any root in the truth most of the time. I tell you what, people will read the look at the news rack sometime. What are they don't have National Geographic in their hand. They don't have Reader's Digest in their hand.
I know, but I know one thing, that when I was a kid in elementary school, we couldn't wait to sneak to the back of the room and open those middle pages of the National Geographic.
That's exactly right. Oh, those tribes.
Those tribes. Yeah, you're right. I mean, that's what seems to grab news, and it goes back to that same four letter word that we used, CASH.
Well, right now, if you go to the store, and I'm just going to bring this up because I stared at it last night, just happened to be thinking about this exact same thing. There's one of these tabloids right now that this is the cover of it. Now, it's not political at all. Doris Day, tragedy at 97. I tell you, why?
How can you be a tragedy at 97?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're still 97, there's no tragedy in that.
Well, there must be something. I honest to goodness, I can't remember the last time I saw Doris Day, but she must be selling magazines. She's got like half the cover of this magazine. Wow. And in the print, I mean, it's got to be 4 or 5 inches long.
Well, I think there's probably a lot of elderly people that'll grab that, and they're hitting that audience at that particular time.
But, I mean, can you imagine if you are Doris Day, you're alive, that you have to go to the grocery store yourself, or people, I'm sure, are calling you saying, what's going on?
She probably cracks up. I would be if I was 97, if she even has the can.
Well, it just made me laugh because I thought, Doris Day, tragedy at 97. My goodness. Isn't that... And that's what people want to buy. Yeah. What's going on with Doris Day?
Before we get off the air, I want to go a little bit of a different direction, just real quickly. We've talked about a lot of the negatives today, and they are there, and where we've gone as society and things that we're doing. And what made me think about this was, you know, the agendas, especially when they were talking about the, you know, doing away with our electoral college, and we know that would just push the control of the country to our east and west coasts, and maybe a little bit of central Chicago area and spots of that would literally control the country. And if you know, to put into that into perspective, it would be kind of like if you have a rural farm community and you have Marion. And if Marion controlled the decision for the whole county and something was going to really hurt those rural people, but they had no say in it. And it's kind of that same kind of thing. And that's why our founding fathers were very, very brilliant when they set this up, because they wanted to protect the states as a whole. But that's not where I want to focus for a minute. I want to, in that light, what I'm saying is that wherever we live and whatever we do, we've lost a lot of our neighborhood mentality. We've lost a lot of what kept America strong and whole. You know, everyone used to say, you go into any major city and you had German village and Italian village, and you may have Irish area of town or whatever that was. And yeah, white people say, you know, we need to melt those together. But the thing that was really missed in that, there was a lot of community in that. And in all of our neighborhoods, we always had a lot of community. And I'm looking at, yesterday, a friend of mine posted something about how Prospect was dying and all the businesses that left. And he's a businessman, and he said that, you know, when the school left, and which was this major employer and brought all the traffic to town, he saw this coming. And I would agree with him. I did, too. But here's the thing. If you look right now if you go in Lewis Center, they've got this new community over there where they built a huge housing development. But within that housing development, they're putting doctors, grocers, all those small businesses, and they're trying to bring back that huge small town community as a new thing. Well, I say, why don't we go into our neighborhoods and bring to rebuild it again the way it used to be? Start supporting those quaint shops. You know, Prospect could be a viable, strong town again. If people just say, you know what, if somebody opens up a business in town, I think I'm going to support it. Yeah, that guy might not cut hair the best, but I'm going to go to that barber anyway. And start having more community feel and caring about each other in the communities. You know, even in the churches in our small towns, people get up, get in their cars, and go out of town to go to church. When there are solid churches right in the town they live in that are plugged in the community and part of it and could support that. And I think that if we begin to, in this country, bring back some of our community thinking, we're going to help a lot of things. One, there's going to be more checks and balances on our children when we're not home. on our properties when we're not home. There's going to be more caring about neighbors when there's a problem. There's going to be more interaction between people. And we'll get away from some of this. I think a lot of this hatred comes from, we're all running around like a bunch of chickens with our heads cut off. We're driving all over the place. You know, oh, I want to buy a hamburger. Okay, I'll drive 15 miles away to go buy one. And no matter what it is, you know, we're going here, we're going there, and people are grasping at straws. So it's these extreme things that catch our attention. It's the hatred that catches our attention. Anything that'll stop and slow us down to focus for a minute. And it's not good things. And I think that if we draw back and begin to care more about each other and what goes on in our neighborhood and around us. I just found out yesterday there's a little boy that lives four houses down from me, 2 years old, was diagnosed with cancer. Now, what am I supposed to do about that? I think I should contact a family, see if they need anything. And other people in the community should too. But that's not what's happening in America, because they've got us running all over the place chasing our tails. And I think that if we began to do this, people would really start caring more about this, the things that matter, our families, our marriages, our children, our parents, our community, our properties. All those things would start coming back again. But we've got to make that effort. And we've got to have community leaders. And I'm not talking about the mayor. I'm talking about community leaders in a four-block area or a five-block or a six-block area that say, you know what, I'm going to take the initiative to step out and start getting to know my neighbors and being there for them and encourage them to come along with me. Scott, I don't think we've lost this country. We're talking about, why is it that people are so drawn to hatred? 60 years ago, that same hatred, people would have never watched the second show. They had chased the guy out of town. And if we don't start getting back to simplicity and caring about each other, we're a runaway train that's going to self-destruct.
You know, people used to like to be entertained, not angered. And
yeah.
I don't know what happened. I really don't know what happened. It's a funny thing when we were talking about this earlier on, you know, anybody who knows anything about Jack Benny, and I love to watch the old Jack Benny shows, radio and television, listen to the old shows. He had a long-standing bit with Fred Allen that they didn't like each other, and they needled each other on the air. Well, they were great friends, but they knew, even in those days, that if they thought there was tension between the two of them, that more people would watch, more people would listen to both of their shows. But that tension was rooted in entertainment. They weren't calling each other anything that they wouldn't have called themselves. Where we've gone beyond is we'll call you things we wouldn't dream of calling ourselves now, just for the sake, and we're not friends, just for the sake of doing
something. It is interesting,
nasty.
And I think that we've just become a society that's just running in every direction. You know, if I give you a good example in churches, you know, we are a community-based family church in Prospect at Community Christian. And right now we've got two families that just went home. One had a baby and another lady was in a car accident. Now I know today they will have meals taken to their house, and we are a family-oriented thing. But what have people done? They've chose to go to these mega churches where they can go in, get pumped up, get filled up, and go away and not be bothered again until they're ready to do it again. And this is the problem. Where's the community? It's not there.
Well, it is interesting. I had a friend who went into the hospital, I think 2 years ago. Young guy. And he was just having a fairly minor surgery, but it was an overnight stay. And he had been going to a bigger church here in Marion. And one of the things he was most annoyed about was nobody from that church came to see him in the hospital. But there was a pastor whose church he didn't even go to, who he just knew occasionally, who drove to Columbus and saw him.
I just did that last week for a fellow that's in the hospital, goes to another church in town, but we're community, and his pastor didn't mind me doing that, and see, that's what we've gotten away from. If you people want to see, it's up to us. What are we going to do? We got to close with that.
I know, but it's a great topic.
And maybe we need to expand this a little more. What can we do as a community to become more community-oriented and quit worrying about Washington? I don't care what Mrs. Cortez does. I think she's off the rails, and I don't want to hear about it on every show.
Oh, Same thing everywhere you go. Now, remember, this show, this is a great show, live every Thursday morning over the back fence. Now on Thursday morning, 9, 10 to 10 a.m. live every week. Repeats Sunday morning, 9, 10 to 10 a.m. same time. Tuesday, 6, 10 to 7 p.m. Pastor Spot with Pastor Steve Whitaker is live every Tuesday, 5, 10 to 6 p.m. 3, 10 to 4 on Wednesday, and 8, 10 to 9 on Sunday. Now, don't forget, we got a whole day of programming coming up. Charlie Evers in 10 minutes, lots of giveaways. I'll be back with you 12 to 2 today, and Adam the Computer Guy, 2 to 3. Pastor, it's always a pleasure.
It is a pleasure. Take care.
Was in here last week, and we talked about Hillary, and she said one of the biggest